Welcome to Chapter 3 for Introduction to Visual Basic. We're going to continue on. In this lecture, we'll actually learn how to write some simple code for our Visual Basic programs to do some more stuff. We'll also talk about some data types, some variable names, and how to store data to be used in our program, and also some decision-making statements to be able to decide what we want to do with our code. And lastly, some relational operators so we can do some mathematics. So again, to this point, we really haven't done code. We've done some Visual Basic program using the drag and drop controls, but we haven't written any code. So today we're going to use our graphical user interfaces again to give it a distinct look and feel and actually use some code to write programs. Again, you'll be able to see the menu options, file, edit, view, tools, window, help, some scroll bars on the side of the page to be able to manipulate and move along in the IDE environment. So in chapter two, we built a form and we built a control and we didn't use any code in it to display it. Now we're going to actually add some code into that program so that we can have it do something more than just display to the user. So the book actually uses a convention where it shows the line numbers. The line numbers aren't a part of the Visual Basic programming language, but it will be able to allow us to reference line numbers so you can see what's going on in the code. So again, here's some back end side of the code. You can double click on the form to bring it actually into the code side to be able to view what we're going to type in. So in this app, we're actually going to add some features. You'll see on line 8, it says label1.text. The dot text property again is going to be the property that allows us to display something in that text box. And we're going to say Visual Basic is fun. So that will programmatically display Visual Basic is fun rather than having to type it into the label at runtime. So at design time rather. So before last week we actually typed it in there. This week it will actually automatically add it for us. So again, it looks the same to the user, it's the same, but from a programmer's perspective, we've programmatically added that control to that program. Again, when we go to add comments to our field, we're going to use the single quote character to actually allow it to be ignored by the compiler. There's two different ways we can do it. We can do it at the beginning of the line and it will ignore everything that's written on that line, or you can add it after some code and everything past that single quote character will be ignored. That's called end of line comments. And again, that's just for ease of the programmer. Sometimes you'll want it to have a whole line. Sometimes you'll just want it at the end of a code snippet so you'll know what's going on. Earlier, we talked about classes. Again, classes are a way of breaking up things and grouping methods together in a program to give it some sort of organization. So the methods are all going to be manipulating data that's in the same program, and that program is going to be defined as a class. Again, our public class so that we have access to it throughout our program. Public and class are going to be our keywords. The keywords, again, are reserved by Visual Basic, can't be used as variable names. In our IDE environment, they'll show up as blue to indicate that they are keywords and reserved. For our class names, again, for our initial project where we were just naming it, it gave it to us a simple app. You see A is capital at the beginning, just for convention. It can't ha start with an underscore, it can't start with a digit, but it can contain them. So we have valid identifiers and invalid identifiers. The valid identifiers would be something like value one or welcome one, and gross pay. But the name seven welcome is invalid because it starts with a digit. By convention, every word in a class name should begin with an uppercase. That's known as Pascal case. Again, Pascal is a high-level language that was developed before Visual Basic, and some of the aspects were taken from Pascal and adopted into some other programming languages. Again, you can't use a keyword as an identifier. An identifier is reserved by Visual Basic to do some specific function. For example, if you try to use double as a class name, Visual Basics can't locate it and is going to cause errors and it won't let you compile your program. So again, all the reserved words will show up in a different color to let you know that they are reserved words, and just be aware of that as you're programming. It's also important to note that Visual Basic is not case sensitive. The keywords and identifiers aren't case sensitive. So a simple app with a capital A, capital S, is the same as saying a simple app in all lowercase letters as far as the compiler is concerned. Programmatically, us looking at it, it gives us significance. We know that it would be a class name or a program name if it begins with that capital, but variable names would be all lowercase. So again, Visual Basic, we have a preferred case that we want to use. We want to look at it in a way that we want to see it. Part of our program will have blank lines and white space. The blank lines are basically ignored by the compiler, but again, make it easier for us to read. Some white space in there is easier to read, and again, ignored by the compiler. Graphical user interfaces are event-driven. We talked about events and how Visual Basic is an event-driven program. It's going to respond to actions created by the user. For instance, a mouse click, an up a down arrow. When we enter a text box or leave a text box, those will generate events, and we have to write handlers to handle those events. One event that happens when the form actually loads is called the load event. So it's that the form underscore load. That event occurs when the program is brought into memory by the user. And sometimes we want things to happen in that load event. So it's going to make it easier for us to use. All GUI controls, including forms, again, have events that are associated with them. We're going to write event handlers, and writing the event handler is known as event handling. Later on, we'll learn how to make methods, and call methods. We'll do that in chapter 6. But there's built-in methods that were used. Again, when an event occurs, it's said to have been raised. So the program raises the event and passes it to an event handler. By default, it uses the default handler, which basically does nothing. Other times, if it encounters an error, it will crash the program. So it's important to know when you write events, what they're handling and how it handles. In our program, it has mybase.load. Again, that's when the form's loaded into memory, and it inserts it automatically. If we want to define our own method, we start with a keyword sub that begins the method declaration. At the end of it, we want to use the line end sub. The body of the method declaration has information in it. Sub is short for subroutine, which was an early term for using methods. Methods are also called procedures in other languages. And again, we add some comments there to help read it and know what's going on. At the end of end sub method, usually you want to put a line in so that you can have some space, and the end sub will actually terminate the method. Visual Basic automatically indents things for us, making it easier to read and making it easier to process. Again, it has nothing to do with the compiler. The compiler basically ignores the indentation, but it makes it easier for us to see what's going on. So when we want to get into the real work of the program, again, that occurs on line 8 of our example. We have the phrase Visual Basic is fun. That actually instructs the computer to perform an action, which is actually change the text field on the label control to be that text string. Characters that are surrounded by double quotes are called string literals or just strings. The entire thing, everything together, is generally called a statement. So when the line is executed, it actually changes the text property of the label to be Visual Basic is fun, and is updating the text on the form. So when we see it, it will update. By assigning it, we're using the equals operator, and it actually gives it a new value into the text field. So when we use the assignment operator, we always want to read from right to left. So what occurs on the right and then is assigned to what's presented on the left of the equal sign. The expression label1.text contains two identifiers, label1, which is actually the control, and text, which is the field of that control. It's separated by what's called the dot separator. The dot separator gives it the property name. And again, when we're typing this into the IDE environment, it will actually show us all of the properties that we can use that are associated with that control. So as you're typing it out yourself, you'll see it populate there, and you'll be able to choose which control you want. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it selects the wrong one as we're typing, and you have to actually exit it out and retype it in. And again, after it executes, it reaches the end sub, which terminates the programmatic definitions. The end class line indicates the end of the class. So again, there's two keywords up at the top, public and private. Most of the classes that we'll define will be public. Most event handling methods are going to begin with the word private. We'll talk about that some more when we get to Advanced Visual Basic, which is Chapter 9 for object-oriented programming in classes. Public methods and private methods are important when you're writing large programs and when you want people only to be able to access certain data and not have access to other data. So again, it's kind of outside of the scope of our introductory class. Just be aware that it's there. So again, here's a step-by-step how we actually improve on our Asimple app that we created in the last chapter. So we open up the Asimple app folder from our examples. Again, we're going to open the SLN file. The SLN file is a bunch of different pointers to the actual program files that we created. So the Visual GUI app, as well as the Visual Basic file, the .vb file. So the SLN in and of itself doesn't contain any information that's relevant to us. It just basically tells the computer to open up all of the other files and group them together into the project. So in larger programs, we may have several forms. We want to rename the forms to different things. For most of our purposes here, we're only dealing with a single form, but you can still change the form name. By default, it's form1.vb. You can change it to asimpleprogram.vb if you go into the Solutions Explorer, right-click, and choose Rename. The dialog will appear and ask you if you want to rename all the references to Form 1 in the project. It's very important that you rename all the references. When the compiler goes to build it, it's going to look at all of the different names, and if it sees Form 1 and Form 1 isn't the name of the form, it will actually throw an error. So you want to make sure that you're replacing all of the references. If you double click on the file to open it, it brings it into design mode. You can select the form by clicking on it. The properties window in the IDE changes to the form name 1 to Asimple app, where you change the file name. You can also rename a file by selecting it in the solutions window and then changing the file name property in the properties window. Again, there's different ways that you can view the form's code. You can right-click on the form and select View Code. You can right-click on Asimple Form in the Solutions Explorer and choose View Code. You can select Code from the View menu, or you can double-click on the form itself, and it will bring you actually into the code window. The editor window contains some pre-generated code that's built by Visual Basic for just creating the program. You can see here we'll have the public class, Asimple app, and the end class, and you type your code actually in the center. Again, the IDE is trying to help us out, so it's going to do some coloring, some shading to identify different elements in it. Keywords are going to appear in dark blue, comments are going to be colored green, And again, other program elements are going to have some different colors. If you create an error in your program, they underline it in red to make it stand out. Again, this is a function of the integrated development environment, not something that's specific to any compiler. So it's actually Visual Studio that's giving you this. If you go to work in some other languages you can actually create within a text editor that doesn't have these options, or you can actually download an integrated development environment that will again provide you that syntax highlighting to differentiate things within the program for you to kind of help you out. Again, we talked about some string literals. You can see the example of the string literal in label1.txt on line 8 of figure 32. You can customize the colors shown in the code editor if you go to Tools and Options and select fonts and colors to display the options for the various code elements. By default, I leave them how they are. It does a good job of differentiating them for you, and that way, if you happen to work on multiple computers, you don't have to change these options every time. You can also configure the editor window to help with your coding experience. There's some different options that you can set. To create the event handler method for a simple app load, you can double-click on the program and it will actually create that event for you. That's the default event. You can also click on asimpleapp.vb in the design tab, again, to view it there. Double-clicking on any control creates its default event handler, and then switches to code view. Again, for the form, the default is the load event handler. If you double-click on the blue background of the form, it creates the event handler. The IDE automatically names an event handler with the name of the control, in this case, a simple form, adds an underscore, and then the method that it's handling, which in this case is load. So again, if we were on the form view and you double-click on it, it automatically brings us into our public class, asimpleapp, and our private sub-function, asimpleapp_load, handling my base.load. Line 3 happens to be too long to fit on a single line in the book, so they split it into two lines. If you want to split something into two lines, you can add the line continuation character, which is just a single underscore between events. Most of the time, you don't really need the underscore, so you'll see it continues on multiple lines when you use other operators. Splitting a statement over several lines without including it can cause a syntax error. A syntax error is an error in the programming. You'll see syntax errors a lot. If you miss a parentheses, you misspell words, or if you have too long a line of code. Visual Basic will try to correct most of the syntax errors for you automatically. Again, to try to help you out as a programmer. Again, using IntelliSense in the editor window, when you click in here, it will automatically try to give you some help to enter code into it. As you start to type, IntelliSense will list out things for you in order to assist you in creating your programs more easily. So, for example, when we start to type label1.t, it'll automatically show you what options are available within that control. The property fields tab index, text align are automatically there. We know that we want text, so you can select text at that point. Again, it's predictive text or typing, so as you start to type out more characters, it will bring you to the selection that you want. You can complete the name by pressing the space or the tab keys. Also, if you close out of IntelliSense by hitting the escape key, you can display it again by hitting Control or the space bar key. Once you have all your code in there, you want to compile and run your program. You can go up to debug and then start debugging or press F5. And again, it should automatically run the program for you, assuming there's no syntax errors. If there's syntax errors, the error handling window will come up and show you what line your errors are on. Otherwise, it will run the program and look similar to our Chapter 2 program. If you just want to compile the program and see if there's any errors, but you don't want to run the program, you can go up to Build, Rebuild Solution. That will create the exe file, asimpleapp.exe, because asimpleapp is the name of our program. Again, that exe file will execute in its own environment outside of Visual Basic, so you no longer need Visual Basic to run that application. But it does run on the .NET framework, so you do have to have the .NET framework installed on the computer that you're running that application. It doesn't automatically include all of the components that it needs. The .exe file, again, indicates that it's an executable file, which actually just means that it can run in a Windows environment. Again, if you have an error in your code, it will have some squiggles. It tries to provide a description of what that error is. Again, that only occurs when it's a syntax error or an error in the code. And it tells you what's expected. It gives you the error list. It tells you basically what line it's on and what's missing. It tries to autocorrect it for you. And again, if it's correct, you can just click on it and it will automatically update that error for you. Sometimes you need to go back to your code and actually fix it more. For section 3.3, it talks about building an addition app. I provided a sample example where I actually made a calculator app, and part of that the calculator app was that. So if you want to see how I did that in the Visual Basic environment, you can actually look at that example show there. That's located on CM Connect as well. So I'll just talk through this without going into Visual Studio. So again, the first thing that we're going to do is create our form, and then we're going to add the code. This is what the code looks like for the addition program to add two integers together. So this is ultimately what we want our GUI to look like. Again, a form up at the top of the form has the name of the form, which we'll call addition, has two labels. The first label says enter first addition integer. The second label says enter second integer. We have a num box and another text box. Then we have a button that says add, and then we have a third text box there that's set to read only. Again, we don't want the user to be able to type into that box, and that's going to display our result for us. So again, in order to create this application, we have to have two labels, we have to have three text boxes, and we have to have a button. So again, we go up into our control toolbox there and drag those controls on. Double click will automatically add them to the form. You can click onto the one that you want to add, and then click onto the form, and it will also add it there as well. So a text box is going to be the control that we're going to use for input. So a text box is actually an area where the user can type information into. So a label we actually type information into, we can set it again in the properties at design time, or we can set it programmatically on the back end at runtime through the load operator. Again, which way you do it is up to you. Generally, it's e just as easy to set the labels properties at design time, as long as they're not changing at any point in your program. A button is the other control that we're going to add. Again, a button will respond to an event such as click or double click, and that's the event that we're going to raise when the user clicks on that button. So when the user clicks on the button, we're going to assume that it has text in the two text boxes, and then we're going to perform the action, which in this case is going to be addition of those two text boxes. So we're going to have some declarations as well. In this case, we're actually going to declare some variable names.
Variables are going to be locations in memory where values are going to be stored for use by the program. So the variables begin with the keyword dim. Dim stands for dimension. Again, it's going to just go out into memory and grab some memory to create a storage spot for those variables. The storage spot in memory is going to have a name. That name is what we're going to refer to as the variable name in memory in order to use them. We're going to create a data type integer. Integer are whole number values as opposed to decimal values or values that have a decimal point. Again, this is for simplicity. Integers are primitive data types. There's other data types that are primitive data types, such as Boolean, double, string, byte, integer, single, char, long, unsigned integer, unsigned long, short byte, data, date rather, decimal, short, and unsigned short. So a variable name can be any valid identifier. Again, it can't start with a number, it can't start with an underscore, it has to start with a character. They can be declared in one statement with a comma, or you can use multiple. A comma-separated list of variable names is okay. Variable names should be meaningful, that is self-documenting. So if you say number, you know that that's a number, as opposed to A. You could call it integer A, integer B. A and B really have no meaning in that program at that time. So you really want to give it something that's going to give it meaning for you to understand and for people who are reading your code to understand. By convention, the first word of a variable name begins with a lowercase character. Any other word that begins with it should have an uppercase character. That's known as camel case. So you could say first number, first is F is lowercase, number is uppercase N. So first number. Again, identifiers aren't case sensitive, but using this convention helps readability and it helps the programmer remember as they're going out and typing these names into their code. So variables are going to store the values that are entered by the user. So we're going to again use the assignment operator, the equal sign, to give the value to number one. The number one is going to come from our first text box. So we say number one text box dot text is going to be the value that is contained within that text box. Then we're going to assign that statement using the assignment operator to our variable name first number. And num2 is going to come from number 2 dot text box. If the user doesn't enter an integer, if they enter the word such as hello, a runtime error is going to occur. Runtime errors are different than syntax errors because they don't occur until the user actually types something into the box. You can use the debugger to see what happens. So if you go debug, start debugging. You can do that. You can terminate the program by going to the stop debugger or clicking the break in that. In chapter 7, again, which is Advanced Visual Basic, they show how to make programs more robust with handling runtime errors. So again, it's outside of the scope of this class to do that. Just be aware that users don't always do what you tell them to do. That happens, you'll see an unhandled error exception. Again, in this case, the program is raising the event, which is an error, and there's nothing to handle it. So the default event for an error is to actually crash the program. So again, we're going to use the variable in our calculation. We're going to have an assignment operator that calculates the sum of two integer values, number one and number two, and assign them to the value of total. So total is going to get the value of number one plus number two. So the expression to the right, again, is going to be always evaluated before the assignment operator occurs. So the addition operator is going to be a binary operator. That is, it takes two different operands. In this case, it's going to take number one and number two. Visual Basic is automatically going to put some spaces to make it, again, more readable. The spaces, again, are ignored by the compiler at runtime, but the IDE is trying to help you out. When we go to display the results in our text box, again, we want to have an expression that's going to be consistent with a literal string and our variable. We're going to use our literal string. The sum is the and symbol, which is the string concatenation operator. Concatenation means putting two strings together. And total is going to be, again, our variable for total, which is going to be representative of num1 plus num2. The string concatenation operator, again, is going to be a binary operator that's going to join two strings together to make a longer string. One of the operands is a number, the other is a string, and Visual Basic will automatically convert the number over to a string for us. Again, we'll do that to create the additions program. We can rename our form one to be additions. We can change the form font. We can change the name of our controls so that we can use them. So the first example, we use label one to access the labels text property. In this case, we're going to change the name of those properties to be something other than that so that we can manipulate them in our program. For the first label, we're going to say number one label. For our second label, we're going to say number two label. For our text boxes, we're going to call it number one text box and number two text box. For our button, we're going to call it add button. And for our label, we'll call it result label. So the author chooses to use the full name of the control within the variable name to keep it straight. Some other texts, some other ways of doing that are using that a three character convention to name them. So instead of labels spelt out, you can use LBL. You can put it after the name of the field or before the name of the field. Again, it's up to you as long as you follow some sort of convention in your program and you don't leave them default. For instance, we don't want to see label 1, label 2, label 3, label 13, text box 1, text box 13. You want to give them some sort of name that's going to be mnemonic that you're going to remember throughout your program. Because the more complex your program is, the more controls your program is going to have on it. And you want to be able to remember what those controls are later on so you can programmatically use them. So again, we can set the text property. The property, if you click on the form, in the properties window changes to the form. And again, you can use the form's text property to change what appears in the top. And again, you can do this for each control. Click on the label, it brings up the properties box and go to the name and you can change it. Again, to add labels to the form, you go into the toolbox and you can double click on them. You can click and drag them. As you're dragging them around your form, you'll see snap lines. Snap lines indicate where they go so that you can align everything in your program, similar to something like Photoshop gives you snap lines. These are just other things that we've talked about, so I'm just going to click through them. Again, you'll add other labels to the form. Again, you should line them up so that they look similar, and have a feel there. Again, you're just going to add all these properties to the form. Again, if you want to see what it looks like more clearly, you can look at the example where I build a sample application. Once we added the button to do the add, we're going to add the click event. Again, if you double click on the button, it automatically brings you into that default event handler, which is click for that button. And automatically it's going to name it for you. Again, everything that appears to the left of the event handler is default, and you can actually change the name of it. Everything to the right, which is the event handler name, can't be changed because that's going to be what actually handles the event that's raised by the program. Once we've added all our text in, you can test your program to ensure that it runs. If it has any syntax errors, it's going to give you an error on that. Again, the variable names are going to reference memory locations. Every variable is going to have a name, a type, a size, and a value. There's a default value that Visual Basic has for each data type. The size is determined by the type that's involved, and the name is going to be what you're going to name it. If the user enters 45 into the text box, 45 is going to be a string that's assigned to the number one text box dot text, and then it's going to assign it to the number one. Visual Basic is going to use some inference to actually determine what's there. If there had been anything that was stored in the variable number one previous to us using the assignment operator, that value is going to be replaced by the new value in its memory. So anything that was stored there originally is going to be lost. If they enter number 72, again, 72 is going to be that entered into the text field. 72 will be the text that number two text box dot text is going to represent. The assignment operator is going to assign it to number two. Again, it's going to infer that because number two is an integer, the value that was entered into number two text box dot text is a number, and then it's going to place that value in its memory location. Once it has those two values, number one and number two, it's going to add those two values and then again assign it to the memory location name total. In this case, 117. So we talked about addition, but there's other arithmetic operators that Visual Basic uses. For multiplication, again, we need the star character. There's also the mod operator. Mod actually represents modulus or modulo operator. Most arithmetic operators are binary because it operates on two operands, a left and a right operand. There are unary operators that take only one operand, for example, plus and minus, and basically that makes it either positive or negative. So we have our arithmetic operators here, addition, subtraction, multiplication. There's floating point division and integer division. Those are different. There's modulus, explanation, unary, minus, unary, plus. So addition, we could say F plus 7. We could say P minus C. We could say B times M. We could say X divided by Y. We could say V integer division U, R modulus S, Q raised to the P, negative E or positive G. Again, there's two types of division operators. There's the floating point division operator and the integer division operator, and they are two different operations. Floating point division gives you the remainder. Integer division only gives you the number of times that was divided by evenly. So when we do something like seven floating point division, seven floating point division four, we're going to have one and its remainder. When we do seven integer division four, it's only going to have a value of one. Everything else is basically thrown away. Same for the expression 17 divided by 5. 17 integer division 5 is going to be 3, where 17 floating point division 5 is going to be 3 plus its remainder. So when floating point numbers occur, 2.3456 or negative 8.54, when they're used with the integer division operator, they're going to round to the nearest whole number, then be divided. That's to say, 7.1 divided by 4 equals 1. 7.7 divided by 4 is going to be equal to 2 because 7.7 is going to be rounded up to 8 before the division occurs. So you have to be careful when you're using integer division that it's actually going to do what you want it to do. To divide floating point numbers without rounding operands, which is normally what you want to do. You want to use the floating point division operator. Using the integer division operator when the floating point division operator is expected can lead to incorrect results. This is called a logical error or some semantic error rather than a syntax error. So the Visual Basic compiler will alert you when there's a syntax error, that is a code error, but it won't alert you when there's a semantic or a logic error. That is, if you make this sort of error, nothing's going to alert you. You'll just get an incorrect result on the other end. Non-integer division can be done using decimal values or the double value, and you have to avoid divide by zero because that will terminate the app. We also said there was a mod operator or a modulus operator. A modulus operator is going to only give you the remainder when the two numbers are divided. For instance, when we say 7 divided by 4, 7 divided by 4 gives you 1 and a remainder. 7 modulus 4 is going to give you the remainder, which is 3. When we say 17 modulus 5, 17 divided by 5 is going to be 3 with a remainder of 2. So when we say 17 modulus 5, it's going to give us the remainder, which is 2. Modulus just gives you the remainder. When you add 1 to 59, you expect the result to be 60. But in an app that keeps time, when you say 1 to 59, it's going to reset to 0. That's where the modulus operator can be helpful. If you say modulus 59, it's only going to give you the remainder 259, so you'll have values 1 to 59. You won't have any values that are higher than 59. It also helps with random numbers. Arithmetic expressions must be entered in straight line form. That's to say, a divided by b has to be written by a divided by b so that all constants, variables, and operators appear in a straight line. You can't use algebraic notation because the compiler won't recognize it. You can use parentheses to help do your code. Parentheses have a higher order of precedence. We'll talk about precedence in a minute here. So if you're going to say b plus c, you can say a times b plus c. So again, there's rules for the precedence, and the rules for operator precedence are similar to those in mathematics or algebra. So PEDMAS are please excuse my dear Aunt Sally, parentheses, exponents, multiplication, division, addition, subtraction are very important because operators are going to do the same thing in Visual Basic. So again, parentheses have the highest order. It's going to do parentheses first. Then it's going to do exponation. Any exponent will be done. Then unary operators, plus and minus. Then multiplication and division. Again, evaluated from left to right. So if it occurs, a multiplication occurs before a division, and we'll do the multiplication first. Integer division is going to be evaluated fourth, then modulus, and then lastly, addition and subtraction. And this is again called operator precedence, and they're contained within parentheses, will help evaluate expressions. For example, if you have a complex expression, a times b plus c times d plus e, if you put parentheses around b plus c and d plus e, those will be evaluated first. So it will do b plus c first, then a times b plus c, and then d plus e will be evaluated, and then c times d plus e, and then lastly, it will do the a times b plus c plus c plus d times d plus e. For example, if you look at this example, y equals 2 times 5 raised to the 2 plus 3 times 5 plus 7. It'll do 5 to the 2 first because exponation takes the highest order of precedence. evaluate that to 25, replace it with 25. Then I will do the leftmost multiplication, which is 2 times 25, which equals 50. Then we'll do the right plus multiplication, which is 3 times 5, which we'll evaluate to 15. And then I will do the leftmost addition, which is 15 plus 16, or sorry, 50 plus 15, which is 65, and then finally plus 7, which is 72. You can add unnecessary parentheses if it makes it clearer to read. They're called redundant parentheses, and basically they'll be ignored, but they're okay to have, and can actually help you in avoiding bugs. In section 3.7, we actually come to decision making. If we want to do something, if a particular event occurs, we can use an if then statement to do so. So an if then statement is going to evaluate what's called a condition. If the condition is met, then something will occur. If the condition is not met, then that condition won't occur. Conditions of if then can be formed using equality operators or relational operators, also called comparison operators. The relational and equality operators have the same level of precedence and associate again from left to right. So we have equality operators equals or not equals. Not equals is going to be the less than and the greater than symbol put together. So we could say x equals y or x not equal y. We can also use our relational operators greater than, less than, greater than or equal to, or less than or equal to. In a case of Visual Basic, again, we're going to use greater than and then the equal sign, or less than and then the equal sign. We can compare integers with the equality and relational operators, and then make some decisions. So we could say if num1 equals num2, number 1 and number 2 are exactly equal. Result box dot append number 1 equals number 2. We'd say if number 1 is not equal to number 2, then we could say result box dot append text num1 is not equal to num2. If num1 is less than num2, we can append that. If num1 is greater than num2, we can append that. Less than or equal to, or greater than or equal to. We can also clear it, the text box here if the text is changed. So again, we have our first number, we have our last number, and we can do the comparisons between them. So again, we can get values entered by the user with a click declaration again, and then use the and if then statements to evaluate them and determine what's displayed in the box. So in this program, we displayed several different lines of code in a text box. To enable that, you actually have to set the text box multi-line property to true in the properties window. You can also use the text box append text method to allow it to enter more text in there. Again, the compiler by default will indent if-then statements for us automatically to emphasize what's being highlighted. We can use the text change event again to raise the event if a text box is changed. So we don't want it to display incorrect values in our results box. So we programmatically in this box, if a text box was changed, we automatically clear that text box out to help display that information. Again, we're going to build the GUI similar to the other GUIs that we've built within this chapter. And if you want to walk through that, I suggest that you do that so that you can see that. And again, always when you've created any program, you want to test the program and be sure it behaves the way that you want. Again, be aware of the level of